not been spoken. Don't let the devil ride. In fact, that song was written by a preacher himself, the Reverend Gary Davis, back in the day, this blues, gospel blues song. And we're hearing it today rendered by Lurie Bell, a blues singer and guitarist. The title of the song is Don't Let the Devil Ride. This is from his 2012 album, The Devil Ain't Got No Music. I love the title too, The Devil Ain't Got No Music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lee, and today we're going pretty serious, if you will, because we're taking a look, as a case kind of winds down in Georgia, the case of the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. And we'll be talking today about some of what you consider. Never mind what the coverage says and whatnot. Now, you can't help but be influenced by coverage. But you have a mind of your own. And we're talking about aspects of this case that you consider to be major issues, both inside and outside of the courtroom, and how, in your view, you think they might affect the outcome of the entire trial. Just to recap, you know that Travis McLeod and his father, Gregory McLeod, and a neighbor, William Bryan, all three of them confronted Ahmaud as he was jogging through a section of an adjoining neighborhood. He lived nearby. And he told his mother as he left the house that he was going to go for a jog. It was not an unusual thing for him to do. He loved jogging. He was, in fact, an athlete, on the football team. And he had been jogging quite a bit all his life. So he was just going on a routine jog, and he would be right back. Of course, he never came back. But it is charged in the court that Travis McLeod, that's his son, Gregory McMichael, Gregory McMichael, that's the father, and William Byron, who is a neighbor, went after Ahmaud and chased him with their trucks first. And then they confronted him directly, and we later learned that they thought he was suspicious. He was a suspicious person. And suddenly they linked him to alleged burglaries and break-ins in the neighborhood that they have yet to prove, of course. And they penned him in. They used the trucks to pen him in so that he couldn't escape. And then William Bryan, the one who took videotapes, he had videos of this confrontation, and we see the tragic end to it, where Ahmaud is confronted directly by Travis McLeod, the son of the other man, and we see Ahmad trying to defend himself by trying to grab the shotgun that he had and aim it elsewhere, but not at him. But the son of the man, Travis McMichael, I don't know why I'm stuck on the name McLeod, does let off three shots from the shotgun, blasting into the body of Ahmad Aubrey, who dies on the spot. And they came up with several reasons and rationales as to why this confrontation occurred. And they also rationalized that it was, in fact, a confrontation, but in the course of making a citizen's arrest. Nobody knew of the citizen's arrest except them. They told the media that they were in the process of effecting a citizen's arrest of Ahmad Aubrey. And, of course, we have the trial based on that. It will soon come to an end. Controversial end. There are aspects of this case that we have talked about, but today I want it to be all your opinion. So what we're listening for from you today is what you think might be or might emerge as major issues in this case affecting its outcome. Okay, so are we clear? What do you believe? Never mind what anybody else says, based on your observation, based on discussions that have been had, based on what we've talked about here, what you have talked about with others, perhaps. What emerges for you, in your view, in your mind, as major issues in this case that you think will definitely affect the outcome? What do you consider those major issues to be, and how might they bear on the final outcome of this trial? It's not too soon to think about this, because, as I said, the case is coming to an end soon. There will be some kind of a verdict, but we have been privy to some of the major factors and elements of this case that have been, to say the least, very troubling and controversial. So we'll talk about those things, how they shape or will shape the outcome of the trial, and explain to us why you think these things, whether they in fact do affect the outcome of the trial or not, but you are identifying them because, to your mind, these were important factors that should have played a major role in the trial and therefore might have affected the outcome, whatever the outcome is. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We're looking for your specific opinion, not mine, not Uncle Bubba. No, your opinion is what is important today. What you think and why you are thinking it as being important in the final outcome of this trial, which we expect would be reasonably imminent. It's not going to take much longer for this trial, because there is great interest in getting it over with as quickly as possible. They do not want this trial hanging on and being a central part of the narrative, either in that part of the country or in communities across America where this trial has taken center stage. 888-874-4888. Let's move along briskly today so that we can accommodate as many people as possible. It would be very nice if you can help us with that, to move along as quickly as possible and take your opportunity and be sure that you have a point of view that you can defend. You can say why you think this. There's no right or wrong, I don't think. It's what you are thinking based on what we have been told in the course of this trial, what we have been able to see, what we have been able to question ourselves. Okay, so 888-874-4888. I see no one yet. That's troublesome. Usually you're on top of things. Well, I see somebody coming in now. But this is what we're doing today. And there's a reason for it. Oh, there's no calls yet. Okay. Why is this case important? And it's important on many levels. For the whole country, it's important. For specific communities in this country, across this country, it's important. And for the thing we call the law, it is very important. How does this case, and how will this case shape our view of the law and what we think about the law because of this case? This is a watershed case, I think. It would cause many cases from here on out to be subjected to great scrutiny. And it, in many ways, I think, would set precedents in the law, because many things have happened in this case that are most unusual. And that's a euphemism for that went crazy, totally off the rails. And so you can expect, no matter what the verdict is, that there will be a lot of fighting, a lot of battle over certain applications of the law, and of course the consequences of those applications of law. Why were certain things permitted? Why were certain things omitted? And what is the aggregate impact on what we call the law? From here on out, how do you expect the law to apply to many situations because of this case and because of rulings in this case? Come on, where are you? You're kind of slow today. 888-874-4888. I know people get intimidated by these kinds of exercises because they feel that, you know, I don't want to be on the record. Of course, be on the record. This case involves all of us. All of us. And we should feel an obligation, as a matter of fact, to express our views about this case because, first of all, we haven't been asked, really. The opinions of the public have not been encouraged or entertained, and yet it is such an important case. Why is this case important? You will tell us why. From your perspective, why is this case so important? Why do we need to know about this case, and what do we need to know about it? What are the significant developments and rulings in this case that you suspect will play a future role in many cases? We will be referring to the Aubrey ruling on certain things because they came out of this crucible here that we have been witnessing. This is the second week of trial, but it is going to be a very impactful trial. There's no question about it in my mind. So, any thoughts? 888-874-4888. Usually, I get a deluge of calls from people who can't wait to put their two cents in. Today, everybody's kind of quiet and laid back and literally under the radar. Nobody wants to go on the record. That is most unusual for this audience. This is a very brave audience, a very upfront audience. And I wonder what the hesitancy might be about. We don't know, but that's what it is. That's what this appears to be. What is, in your view, what did you derive from this trial that you think will be significant in other trials for years to come? Ed from Queens, you start us off today.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ed. What's going on?
Well, you know, me and the phone's here, still hanging.
That's a good thing. That's a good sign.
What they say. Referring to the Ahmaud Arbery, I call the Ahmaud Arbery trial. I don't really want to acknowledge the three individuals for personal reasons, but a lot of it depends upon the verdict. If these men walk, which I hope they don't, but I have a feeling that they might, based on the decisions of the judge and the prosecution, is going to call into the question of citizen's arrest, which I honestly believe is a fallacy. There is no such thing as a citizen's arrest. There's no laws that empower everyday citizens to take up arms and hold people hostage if they believe they committed a crime or were involved in a crime. So that's going to be called into question as far as the law is concerned, depending upon the verdict. It's also going to call into question, from my personal perspective, how far can a judge go in whatever their political views are. There have been allocations from phones ringing with certain anthems used by groups to the judge's decisions as far as how the victim can be categorized. You can't call them a victim. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of things that are appealable, in my opinion, based on my limited knowledge of the law, depending upon how this verdict is rendered by the jury, that make this case questionable.
But irrespective of the jury's verdict, and we'll deal with that when it happens, what questions in your mind were pivotal to this case that should have been raised, and for what reason are those questions important, whether they were raised or not?
Well, the primary question to me is, as an American citizen, your ability to walk where you want to walk or to go where you want to go. Are we still of the mindset that there are certain places based on your flesh tone where you can't be, or certain perceptions that allow different communities, the profile of the communities based on religion or flesh tone. I mean, that's basically what it is. There have been several people that came to that house and looked in it on video, and they weren't accosted or questioned by the community. This young man who had a common behavior of jogging around the neighborhood, all of a sudden he's put in question because he stopped and looked into an abandoned property that wasn't properly secured. That's one thing. Another thing is jury selection. I mean, how can you select a jury to profile a community when you only have one member of African-American heritage and 11 white people in a part of the country that's 29% to 30% white? I mean, 29% to 30% African-American. That's another thing that calls into question, jurisprudence. There's just a lot of things. There are the old responses to situations like this, which white people feel empowered to take the law to their own hands and how they've been treated. I mean, even in New York with Bernard Goetz and the Yusuf Hawkins trial, other things of that nature. How far have we come? Have we actually in this country even reached a point to where race wouldn't play such a large factor? Because in my mind, these men are guilty. They accosted an individual. They had no just cause to stop this individual. Even when they called the police told them not to bother, and they went beyond the response of the police to take the law into their own hands. Like I said, a lot of this really weighs on the verdict.
Well, you gave us at least 3 to 4 good guidelines here that will come up. I guarantee that they will come up as objections, popular objections to whatever verdict is rendered, I'm sure. Thanks a lot, Ed, for getting us started today. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, everyone. I look at this case from this perspective. I think about the concept of sundown town. In other words, that concept for certain people, when sometime sundown comes, you're not supposed to be there. So this is a current iteration of that type of thing where someone, usually a person of color, after sundown is not supposed to be there. But this is an iteration where he wasn't supposed to be jogging or whatever in that area that he was in. That's one thing. So number two, I look at this as doing an activity and doing something that you are not supposed to be doing. Quite often, people will ask you what you're doing there. I know personally that has applied to me numerous times when I was legally in a place that I was entitled to be, and I was asked what I was doing there. Okay, that's the second part. The third part, as I look at it, is the concept of self-defense. That's coming up in some of these cases, self-defense. And it's interesting that people will attack someone and get away with breaking the law in terms of attacking that person by saying they were in self-defense. A good example was the Trayvon Martin case when this European man attacked a young boy and got away after the 6 women on the jury said it was all right, and they exonerated him from that murder. So those are the aspects I see with this guy the case. He wasn't supposed to be where he was, and that is quite common. That happens to a lot of us. And questions about what you're doing there, I've been asked that many times. And the other, the first part being the whole white supremacist idea of sundown towns. In the beginning, it was slave patrols and the police and the other authorities that are available to guard the concept of sundown town. And I have had my own family going places where they were legally entitled and being asked why they were there. So those are the main elements as I see in it, and that's the way I look at it.
Thank you so much for your contribution today. Jeremiah from Harlem, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today, Therese?
Okay, thanks.
I was laying out there for a second because I always like to give as many opportunity to as many voices to be heard, and I called on Friday, but then you said people were a little reluctant today, which is surprising. And there's actually a lot of really brilliant listeners to your show who never call or never think to call. I think actually also a lot of your outstanding listeners.
No, I know. I was hoping to hear from some of them today.
Well, you know, and a lot of them actually, unfortunately, Therese, well, fortunately and unfortunately, is they listen, you know, off of the internet or whatever at a later time, and they're not listening live. So, you know, you're reaching a lot of people that can't necessarily interact with the live broadcast. But on the subject at hand, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I said I understand. I understand that.
Yeah, right. Well, on the subject at hand, you know, I've said this for years now, and, you know, it's based on the teachings of Malcolm X, which I hold dear to my heart. And Malcolm X made it very clear. There's no such thing as a second-class citizen. Either you're a citizen or you're a non-citizen. And as far as I'm concerned, people of African descent in the United States are not citizens. And we can pretend that we're citizens. As I say, we practice some of the modalities of citizenship. But at the basic bottom line, I'm not a citizen of this country. I've traveled with a U.S. passport. And, you know, there might be documentation or, you know, perhaps my right to vote could be used as an indication that I'm a citizen in some way. But I don't consider myself a citizen fundamentally because we've seen so many times that black people, people of African descent in this country can be murdered by law enforcement and there's no price to pay for it whatsoever. And then I'm glad the previous caller brought up Zimmerman. And how he, as a so-called vigilante, took it upon himself to murder an innocent black teenager. I mean, basically a child, not even a man. He hunted him down and was exonerated for that. So I'm very, you know, I don't want to say pessimistic about what might happen with this verdict, but if the very worst outcome possible, if all these people were exonerated, that wouldn't surprise me one bit. It couldn't be surprising. And, you know, I do think, however, from a legal point of view, there is sort of a, and I haven't followed the case in detail. I don't even know where one would follow the case with the best coverage. And I actually didn't watch the whole video in the first place. I saw little clips of it, but I couldn't watch the snuff film. And there's so many of these snuff films. I couldn't bring myself to just play it. Like, I came across some of the pre-images. I think they showed some of those images on CNN, like it's something that you could, you know, possibly see even if you were avoiding seeing it. But, you know, I didn't see the actual moment of execution. I couldn't bring myself to do it. But, you know, there is this interesting legal aspect of the person who videotaped it, because I saw him interviewed months ago on mainstream television. And, you know, I don't know, you know, ultimately what the play out will be, because he sort of is legally in a different category than the men who carried out the execution. But I don't know in terms of literally proximity. I mean, was he the neighbor who pulled out
yes.
the camera?
He was the
right.
neighbor.
But I mean, right. But I don't know to what extent he was involved in sort of any pre-discussion or, you know, provoking them further, or was he just an innocent holder of a camera, so to speak? You know, so, you know, there is that one little legal thing I just wanted to put in the discussion, which I have no particular knowledge of, but is sort of a feature of this in terms of the legal discussion. You know, there's, you know, his presence is sort of a third party element.
Well, he qualified himself. He was not an innocent bystander, and there were no objections, at least from what I saw. He did not object to what they were doing.
Right, it did not be that way.
He did not protest. He did not say, "What are you guys doing? Stop it." He said, in fact, "You know, let me get my camera."
Right. And in reaction to what, however? Like, if those men, for example, had said, "This man has robbed us," and you're under the impression that those men were literally defending themselves, and it turns out what they said to you was untrue. Again, I'm not defending the man or claiming that that's the truth of the case. I don't know the dialogue, the pre-dialogue. Like I said, I admit my ignorance. But I'm just saying there is sort of a legal distinction there. I guess I'm asking you what... how you would interpret that distinction. I mean, would you consider him just simply as guilty as the other two based on what you know? Or would he spend 30 years in prison while they spend their lives in prison? I mean, you know.
Well, he was a part of it. And he knew from the way things were playing out, he knew that that was a dead man he was looking at. That was going to be the end of this. It would end badly for him, meaning he will be dead.
Right.
He did not.
He seemed to assume his own innocence.
I'm sorry?
He seemed to assume his own innocence in going on mainstream television and knowing he has the he provided the evidence of his own guilt. And his neighbor's guilt.
He did not expect it. He did not expect things to blow up. And then he apparently had a chance to rethink what he did. And what he did was he placed himself as a cohort in a murder. He did nothing to stop it. He didn't say, "Okay, guys, let me call the cops."
Right.
Or went to a neighbor's house and said, "Call the cops." He didn't do anything to prevent it. In fact, he seemed to relish the idea that he had exclusive footage.
Right.
So he took advantage of it.
He wasn't very astute in realizing that he was indicting himself.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, I think black people need to withdraw from the system as much as we can. I think, you know, I think we're kidding ourselves in trying to participate in America and all the fantasy of America and the symbolism of America. I think we shouldn't stand for the national anthem. I think we shouldn't celebrate American holidays. You know, I think the whole hypnotism of America busts up any sort of momentum we do generate as activists. Because, you know, maybe some atrocity happens, like the murder of Trayvon Martin or Ahmaud Arbery, and then we protest, and then we go and celebrate Easter, and we look for Easter bunnies, and then we go and celebrate Christmas, and we blow all of our money that, you know.
Well, you know, that is a natural consequence. It's a natural consequence of psychological oppression. When you behave inexplicably the way you are expected to behave, and you're constantly back and forthing over things that you should have serious clarity about, and you would know automatically where you should be standing. But part of this whole thing of oppression is that you get confused. You don't know whose side you're on. You don't know if there is a side that you should take. And what you're looking for is a plausible explanation as to why you were on the wrong side at the right time.
Yeah, indeed.
Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
888-874-4888. We're talking about this case as it winds down. But we have enough information to begin to have a reaction to this case as a whole up to this point. And we should be formulating something of an attitude or reaction to this case. Things that strike us as unusual, things that strike us as illegal or unconstitutional, things that we want to know more about, things that we see in this case as irregular. But in any event, we don't want to discuss it in the open for some reason, and yet that is exactly what we must do. That is exactly what we are called to do. Gwen from New York, you are on the air at 888-874-4888. Hello, Gwen.
Hi, Therese. Hi. I am very stunned at how all these things are going. I think that you've got to tie both of these cases together. They are different cases, but I feel that both of them are going to be cases where the outcome is pretty bad for our whole country. I think that this case is going to be is going to rest on the precedent of the Zimmerman case, and I think that they're going to get off. And I think because of the political climate in the country.
But what is the precedent? What is the precedent of the Zimmerman case?
George Zimmerman went, followed some little boy around, and then killed him, and then he got off, and no problem.
Yes, but that's not precedent.
That isn't precedent. To me. I might be using the word incorrectly, so I apologize. I'm not an attorney. What I'm saying is that once one of those cases broke through like that, and there were many before that, but that was so obvious and in your face that, you know, this was a kid. It was a little kid buying Skittles and iced tea, and this man is following him around and jumps on top of him, tries to beat him up, and the kid fights back and he kills him. I mean, really? So that was stunning. I think that was really stunning for a lot of people when he got off. And so I don't know. I mean, it was pretty stunning that in the Arbery case, they put 11 white jurors in and one black. So that's kind of interesting in this day and age. And at the same time, you have this Rittenhouse trial going on, which is it's unbelievable to me. Unbelievable that you can walk into a crowd with an AR-14 and shoot it, and then you turn around and say you were defending yourself. It's unbelievable, and the judge is so blatantly biased that, you know, like, what are we supposed to do? So I guess the way I read all this, that if both these cases, I think they'll both fail. I think both of them are going to get off. I think that then we should assume we live in a vigilante country. And it is A-okay for you to get out your AR-14s or whatever you want. Because what I saw with the Rittenhouse murder was this boy go in. He went in with a policeman. The policeman was next to him. And he kind of was, you would have thought he was a policeman because they both had the same gun. Now, Rittenhouse didn't have a uniform on, but Rittenhouse, that's a little older than a teenager, has the same gun. I would have thought he was a plainclothes policeman. And everybody protected him. So I think it's really scary what could happen if both these cases don't serve justice. I think you're going to see I think you're going to see the left say, the hell with it. We're going to pick up arms too then. Because if you're coming to rallies with armed and it's open season on everybody, I think everybody's going to start carrying around openly their weapons and just handling their own security as need be. And that's going to be a really difficult way to live in our country. Very hard to go to a protest and know that you could be shot upon. I think it's you know, in the Arbery case, it's unfortunately, it's of the old South and of the new South. I have to say, my father grew up in the South, and although he never went to a lynching, I asked him, I said, well, you know, he was a little kid, but I said, why didn't you say anything? Why didn't anybody say anything? He said, if you said something, you were going to get the same thing. What do you think? They were going to hold back on you because you were white? He said, you just shut your mouth. And he said, that was pretty scary to speak up to. So, you know, doesn't look like there's any changes in the South at this point. And I would say that it's interesting because of this. I'm not tying together the abortion case with this. I'm just saying that that was so blatantly against the rule of law to say that no woman could have an abortion, although the
yeah, but
the
you're off.
Okay,
the rails on that one.
I'm just comparing.
Stick to the issue.
Okay. All right. My point is this: is that when we started making decisions like this through the courts that are blatant, it looks like through the courts we're going to be saying that vigilantism is okay. Going out and killing a black person is just fine if you lynchings are okay. So it looks like it's being guided through our court system to take on extraordinary actions that one would definitely think would be against the law.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thanks for
thank
your
you.
Input today. 888-874-4888, getting reactions about those issues that you think will play or should play a major role in the decision when this case finally is decided. We don't know how it will turn out, why people would say whatever they say. We do know that there were concerns about the composition of the jury. Even the judge said so. He was concerned about that. But at the same time, he said he was going to allow the trial to continue, despite the fact that 11 of the 12 jurors were whites, only one person on the jury was black. So following that observation, I was a bit concerned that it did not, in the trial itself, constitute a point for of contention, that they just let it go. There were no real arguments entertained by the court on this question in the court at the time. Joe from Florida, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to bring in something in that I don't know the law in either state. But with the Rittenhouse case, if he was in
not
the process
not discussing the Rittenhouse case.
I'm sorry?
We are not discussing today the Rittenhouse case.
Well, what is the clue me in?
Okay, we're talking about this case of the murder of Ahmaud Arbery.
Okay. All right. Well, there's obviously it was wrong for them to do that, to point a gun at him. They had no evidence that he had done something wrong. If they had evidence that something is the guy did something wrong, the jogger did something wrong, I think that it would be okay to hold the person at gunpoint. For instance, if somebody were to commit a murder and you saw it and you could hold that person at gunpoint, technically that's a citizen's arrest. You're holding that person at gunpoint, and I don't see anything wrong with that. If you walk into your house...
Well, citizens' arrests have been ruled in many cases to be illegal and unconstitutional.
Let me ask you this, then. You walk into your house and there's a criminal in there, in the process of robbery, and you happen to have a gun on you, and you point the gun at him and say, freeze, I'm calling the police. What would happen then?
Well, the question is, how do you know what will happen? You walk into your house and see somebody. What are you supposed to do as a responsible citizen? What gives you the automatic right to kill somebody because they are on your property?
Well, if they resist, as in to approach you, you're standing in your home with a gun pointed at somebody because they shouldn't be there, and the person comes toward you, you got a real problem. You're going to have to pull the trigger. If not, the person might take the gun away from you and kill you. And that's the problem.
Well, these are hypotheticals, and I understand that. But
well, that's what happened in the case of the jogger.
No, that's not what happened in the case of the jogger.
The jogger went and grabbed. I saw the video. The jogger went and tried to grab the gun, the rifle, or whatever, shotgun or whatever it was, from the guy that was pointing the gun at him. The guy that was pointing the gun at him made the mistake of he was too close to the jogger. And he allowed the jogger,
we're not discussing the logistics of a violent encounter in which one person is shot dead, another person, for undetermined reasons, except that he determined singularly that this young man did something wrong. That was never proven.
Let me allow me to put it this way, and then you can go on to somebody else. If somebody's pointing a gun at you, you better respect it unless you know what you're doing. Period. That's the end of it. Thank you.
Right. But if somebody is pointing a gun at you and you feel reasonably sure that they will kill you and you think you have a fighting chance to avert that, and you can do that by grabbing, as he did. He tried to grab the gun so as to control the situation and to avoid being shot to death. Who are we to say that
you no, you are 100% right. I agree with you 100%. The problem is that you're taking a chance either way.
Yeah.
And when I had a gun pointed at me, the first thing that came across my mind was to take the gun away from the guy that was pointing a gun at me. But I decided not to do that because there were two people there, and both of them were armed. So that wouldn't have been a good choice for me. But you're right. If somebody's pointing a gun at you, you have a choice to acquiesce, to go along with the program until you might have a better chance before they kill you, and they might not kill you. That's problematical. You don't know. You don't know. I don't know if, and no one knows if the intent of the guy that holding the gun was to shoot the jogger. I don't know that. Nobody knows that.
Well, we know that that was part of a considered part of the intention, the running at him, the trying to corner him with their vehicles,
sure,
to run him down. That was part of it.
But you can't. I personally can't conclude that his definite intent was to kill the jogger. I can't see that.
So why would he have a gun? Why would he have a shotgun?
Well, that's
except the guy doing the video, they had guns.
Right, exactly. The two people, both of them had the guy in the pickup.
Father and son.
Pardon?
Father and son.
Right, sure. And they both were armed.
Yes.
Now,
they were both armed, and they should have known, having had experience working with the district attorney's office there, that there's no such thing as a citizen's arrest. No such thing.
Well, I have to respectfully disagree with you. If you see a crime committed, a murder, for instance, and
there was no crime committed.
The first police officer on the scene said
that the son told him, the one who did the shooting, they didn't see this young man do anything.
Correcto. He shouldn't have. He had no reason to point a gun at him.
Well,
but that doesn't. Not to mention
to kill him with three shotgun blasts. He meant to kill him.
Well, after he, you know, here's the problem.
There's no problem.
If you point a gun at somebody, you should know the law.
You have experience in the district attorney's office where you worked. You should know that there is no such thing as a citizen's arrest except in the mind of a vigilante. I am the law, so I can kill you with impunity.
A citizen's arrest doesn't imply that you're going to kill somebody. If you see somebody commit a crime, one meaning,
and it has been ruled illegal to do.
Well, what about, you see videos all the time where somebody commits a crime and another guy, a good Samaritan or whatever
they
you want to call him, jumps.
They don't know the law. They are operating outside of the law, period.
So if you see a guy that just committed a crime and you see it and he's in the process of committing a crime and you jump on him and hold him on the ground until that's an arrest.
Then you're stupid. No, you're just stupid to do something like that.
No, it's not stupid. You caught somebody.
That's what law enforcement is for. That's what the police are for.
If they're not around,
nobody assigned you as a police officer. Nobody assigned you to uphold the law.
Well, we have a major disagreement here because if you just saw somebody shoot a clerk in a gas station and the guy's running right by me, I'm going to grab hold of him because I'm capable of doing
that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That would be a stupid decision on your part.
Depends on who you are.
And if you were killed in the process of executing an illegal maneuver, that's on you.
That's right.
When you have the so-called right to carry a gun, the assumption is you know when and how to use it. When it is legal, when it is not. When it is appropriate, when it is not. Just because you have a gun doesn't mean you have to shoot it and shoot people and sort out the details later.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that if I saw somebody commit a crime, a murder, or shoot somebody, and I had an opportunity to grab hold of that person, because I know what I'm doing because I was trained in that, if I could do, I would do it, and I don't think that's not a legal thing.
That's you, and you are not the law.
You now have to operate within the law.
And as much as you have all that sense and those credentials to be given the right to handle a gun, you should have enough sense to know when it is appropriate to use it and legal to use it.
A whole lot of people don't.
If you're going to be so careless and reckless and downright stupid to put yourself in a situation where you can incur a hell of a lot more grief than any situation that you're in would allow.
It depends on who you are and if you're able to do it. Apparently, the jogger failed.
This is a very American way of thinking. Americans, in the end,
reserve the right to interpret the law however they want to interpret the law. I didn't pick and choose. Excuse me.
There's a reason
they call
it the law.
I didn't pick and choose who I was going to defend and protect.
Nobody's asking you to defend anything.
Well, I think
you were not called to defend anything. You just called to be a good citizen, which includes obeying the law. Now, if you want to take it upon yourself to be a soldier of fortune and go out there and take charge,
that's
and
not
be
what
the
I
law,
did. I did it in the Marine Corps. I did, ma'am. I did it in the Marine Corps. I wasn't on my own. I'm not a vigilante.
Right, but the Marine Corps is the Marine Corps. When you are out in the world of the citizenry, you are called upon, even as a Marine, to obey the law.
And
you're not a police officer.
How about the case where you want to do is
use your judgment, see how fast you can get away from the situation to get to a phone to call the rightful law officers.
Let me end by telling you this. I saw in New York City a couple cops chasing a person, okay, a criminal. Yeah. They were chasing him. So the guy...
How do you know he was a criminal? By the way, how do you know that
because,
person was
well, the
criminal?
Cops were chasing him. So you would assume
so,
that... They
so therefore he's a criminal?
Pardon?
So the cops were chasing him, so therefore he was a criminal?
No, no. I don't know if he was or not. I don't know the guy.
Then you just said the cop. You saw the cops chasing
he's probably
a criminal.
They probably want him. And so the guy takes his cane and trips the guy. So are you telling me that that guy was wrong with the cane? That the
there
cops were able to catch up with him?
There is a whole bunch of stuff. You're telling me about hypotheticals. I'm talking about the law.
No, this really happened. No, this happened.
That's what keeps a society civil. When people take it upon themselves to have interpretations, their own interpretations of when the law applies, when the law does not apply, to whom the law applies, and to whom the law does not apply, then you have problems.
Oh, absolutely.
You either have a lawful society or you don't. There's no halfway point around this.
Well, there's a lot of people, a lot of criminals out there that don't ascribe to your theory, to your to what we both agree upon.
And there are a lot of people who, in fact, are law-abiding, who have no respect for the law.
Well, you know,
they swear to you that they're law-abiding, but you know, I have a 38. And I'm not going to allow this to happen to me, and I won't see that happen. And I will pull out my 38 and do a Clint Eastwood. No. That's not the way we live. That's not the way we live. We have a law-abiding society. It's time to go. Thank you all for calling in. Thank you all for contributing. And we come back to each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.